Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to Electric Liberty Land, here on the Lions of Liberty podcast, your weekly shot of culture, comedy, and liberty with your host, Brian McWilliams.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another fantastic edition of Electric Liberty Land. Thanks for joining me here. Brian McWilliams bringing you your weekly shot of culture, comedy, and liberty. Apologies. Last week, the show got pulled off YouTube because of their, community standards clause. I think it was because I sampled a Rand Paul statement where he was talking about COVID. So I'll tread lightly because I don't want my interview today to get pulled off with a guest I'm very excited about, Mr. Federico Fernandez. I will bring him on in just a minute. But, you know, before we start, I want to tell you guys, please get into our Patreon. I'm wearing my taxation is death shirt today. And obviously, with what's going on right now in Afghanistan, this shirt is a poignant conversation starter and really a statement as to how our tax dollars are used to bomb people across the globe, including the Afghan people who really don't want us there. That much has seemed to be abundantly clear. And we'll talk a little bit more about that on the show. But, also I was kind of joking that I'm going to tell my kids that sending these troops back, the Biden administration sending thousands of troops back into Afghanistan, that's the definition of white extremism, right? Getting in there. Have these white guys marching in and repeating the mistakes of the past and really not helping anything. But without further ado, you guys can join patreon.com/Lions of Liberty. Get in there. $5 is the lowest amount you can come in on. Get all of our bonus content, my bonus shows, my morning rants. And of course, you get discounts on all the gear like the t-shirt I'm wearing today. And you can choose how much you influence the show by virtue of how much you want to contribute per month up into actually producing your own show and topics here. So check that out again, patreon.com/Lions of Liberty. All right. Now that that's out of the way, I want to bring in a guest, a man I've become very fond of and who has introduced me, along with some other compatriots of his, into becoming more involved in the European liberty movement and more involved in what's going on there, pushing free markets, pushing free ways of thinking, pushing against, obviously, the modern monetary theory and ways of operating, which seems to have run rampant like a plague through the entire world. So without further ado, it is Federico Fernandez. Welcome to Electric Liberty Land, my friend, and nice to see you.
Hello, Brian. It's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So, you know, coming into this, Federico's invited me. I'm going to be going over to speak at the Austrian Conference, the 10th annual Austrian International Conference, which is bringing together free minds, free markets, economists, philosophers, people that yell into microphones like myself, and so much more. And I want you to tell people about that. But before we do, I want to hear a little bit more about you and your background. Because, you know, you're coming, I think right now you live in Poland. Of course, you're not originally from Poland. And I'm curious as to your journey and how you came to this position as a senior research fellow at the Austrian Center, which is its own free market think tank over in Vienna.
Yeah, happily. I mean, I'll try to be brief anyway. A long time ago, longer than I would like to, acknowledge, in 2004 with, a group of friends and people who were interested in liberty, we started a foundation in Argentina called Fundación Bases to promote the ideas of classical liberalism or what you would call in the US libertarian ideas, basically. Mm-hmm. That led me to do a lot of work related to the Austrian School of Economics. And eventually that led me to know about the Hayek Institute in Vienna and then the Austrian Economic Center that was born a little bit after the Hayek Institute. and well, to know Barbara Colm and other people who work at the Institute. In 2013, I was quite tired of what was going on in Argentina. And I had never lived abroad. I had traveled a lot. I was very lucky in that regard that I had never lived abroad. So, and I was really quite fed up with what's going on in the country. So I always liked Vienna. I don't have any, you know, my let's say my background is from Spain and Italy, my family background. I had nothing to do in that regard to Central Europe, but I have always liked this part of the world. I have always been very much interested in Vienna, everything that was going on there 100 years ago. Of course, the Austrian School of Economics. So I said, okay, I'll go at least for some months. My idea was to go there between 8-9 months, learn some German. And well, when I was planning on doing that, I contacted Barbara and I told her that I was planning to go to Vienna. And if there was something I could do at the Institute, I would be very happy. And she made a terrible mistake, and she said, yes, come with us.
And once you were in, you were in. Impossible to get out of there.
Indeed. Yeah. And well, those original 8-9 months out of, you know, since September 2013 and counting, I lived in Vienna for a little bit over 4 years. And well, then I met my wife, who was not my wife at the time I met her, of course.
Economics and love at first sight, you know, same thing.
Indeed, yeah.
And they say that the best basis for a marriage is always economically shared viewpoints.
that would be very practical, you know, that you meet someone, yeah, you immediately
are married. Some people say sexual chemistry, but not me. I get them in the bedroom and I ask them about their... I say, what do you think about fiat currency?
Those were, you know, my openings, as you can imagine. You know, we were talking about, what was her position about, you know, 100% reserve banking or free banking. Right. Anyway, well, and I met her in Vienna. She was working there at the time. And well, then I moved here and we eventually got married. So, I mean, I've been very much related to Argentina and to Latin America in general before all this craziness of COVID and coronavirus and whatever. I used to travel a lot between, let's say, the two parts of the world. Now, you know, but let's say I knew Zoom and all these things before they became fashionable. Right. So I was used to working like this.
Well, tell me a little bit more. You know, I'd mentioned this to you, but you had said that Argentina had a very libertarian, and again, I'm curious to see what it is now versus what it was before. As you said, you got a little bit fed up with what was going on in the country. So tell me a little bit more about Argentinian economics, the way in which people view liberty and their own personal freedoms. And then I also want to hear a little bit more about the differences currently in the European sphere of influence and how that might differ from where I'm coming from, especially since I'm coming over there. I'm very interested to see how people are going to react to some of the things that I think.
Well, Argentina, you know, there are several ways that we could talk about the country. Let's say economically is doing very badly, and I don't think it's going to improve in the near future. When I left in 2013, we still had as president someone called Cristina Kirchner. She and her husband basically ruled Argentina since 2003, I think. 2003, yes. Since 2003, they were 12 years until 2015. There was, afterwards, it came a center-right government in 2015. They did not succeed, unfortunately. They tried to be very gradual in their approach and, you know, the reality, like a wave, you know, basically moved them aside, and unfortunately the Cristina Kirchner came back, not as president but as vice president. For many, she is the acting president anyway, myself included, by the way. And the situation is not good. We are, let's say, our Argentina has one of the highest inflation rates in the world. The economy is a disaster. The confinements and the lockdowns in the last 18 months have been brutal. The number of SMEs that have went down is unbelievable. The number of people who have lost their jobs, the situation with, you know, let's say people who are informally working, and many, there are many other things that you know, are very, very other metrics that are very bad. What's really encouraging is that, on the other hand, the libertarian movement in Argentina is definitely growing, and it's growing very strongly. Argentina has, and then maybe we can talk about this, has a strong libertarian tradition and classical liberal tradition, and it's having like a total revival, but to the point that now, in this year, we have midterm elections, you know, legislative elections, and there are several quite libertarian candidates, some of them extremely libertarian candidates, mm-hmm. and with possibilities to enter, very big possibilities to enter the parliament.
Is it the first that you have outwardly libertarian candidates running for office in Argentina, or was it something that in the past some candidates were more like that and it got away from it, and now it's that resurgence?
Well, there's, I would say, you know, to make a long story short, let's say since, you know, in the last like 20 or 30 years, in the 90s, you know, remember 1989, the wall fell. So there was all this, let's say, renewed passion for classical liberal ideas, for market reforms. And in Argentina, it's strangely enough, the Peronist Party allied with what was at the time the classical liberal party, and they did a lot of reforms. Some of them were very good, but of course, I mean, the Peronist Party has the capacity to pervert everything and you know, corrupt everything that they touch. So eventually that didn't end up very well. In 2003, there was a presidential candidate that was third, was very close to enter the runoff election, because we have this system of the so-called ballotage, that the first two, if you don't get 50%, the first two go to a runoff election. He was very close, and he was very openly classical liberal and saying it very, very clearly. And then there was silence, in the sense, politically speaking, I mean. Then there was almost a nuclear winter. There was a huge wave of populism. It was a very dangerous populism, because it was populism with money, you know, because the commodity prices. That's why you had, you know, criminals like Chavez in Venezuela doing whatever they wanted, because, you know, oil skyrocketed. The prices of all the commodities that Argentina sells, like soy, for instance, skyrocketed. In part, thanks to the Federal Reserve, but that's another story. But yeah, the Federal Reserve boosted the populist revival in Argentina, for sure, and in Latin America. But regardless of that, yeah, so it was quite a difficult time. I think the work that organizations like Fundación Bases and many others did helped keep the tradition alive. And now, thanks to social media, thanks to very clever use of YouTube and other things, we have particularly economists who are total rock stars and celebrities, and people, you know, that you totally see that they are not known among ourselves. You know, it's not that, no, it's my grandmother knows them. You know, people, normal people knows them. They have 500, 600,000 followers on Twitter, more on Instagram, and they are very popular, and that is really boosting the movement. That's, and I'm very excited for what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing something, and I not to the extent that you're talking about, and I'm hopeful that that's going to happen here in the United States, but that's something I've been keying in on a little bit. I've been witnessing it, and I have, it's like you almost feel the groundswell coming in the younger generations now coming up, and with social media. You know, I've seen it on TikTok, you know, very popular platform that I'm trying to get more involved with, because like anything, these things always evolve from something very stupid and kitschy, and then they start being used for all sorts of things. So I'm seeing a lot of younger people posting economic videos, pushing for free markets and pushing back against top-down, you know, systems like we have in the United States, like Argentina put into place. And I do wonder if it's a combination of either information access or just that a younger generation is coming up, you know, having experienced COVID and lockdowns, having seen their parents be put out of work, having seen themselves be unable to go out and live their lives. And, especially if you're coming out of college or if you're high school, just trying to get a basic starter job. If the economics of what's happened could be the best thing to ever happen to libertarianism and free market thinking. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a very good question. And I think it's a combination of what you say and probably other things that we are missing. But definitely, yeah. I mean, all these COVID lockdowns and things like that have been, I mean, they have been like, you know, very cold water thrown at you and saying, wake up. Because, yeah. I mean, I like you mentioned at the beginning, I am in Europe right now. Europe has Poland is part of the European Union. One of the main and core principles of the European Union was free movement of people. And that was erased like this in 1 second last year without asking anyone, without just, you know, our overlords decided.
Right. I mean, the UN aren't even elected. They get to dictate everything you do, where you move, how your money is spent, and you have no say.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that for many, when you realize, hey, you know, I used to have a life and now I can't go see my grandmother, you know, there's something that is really going on that it's very bad. On top of that, you know, the money printing and the craziness with that is also, you know, fueling a lot of very bad sentiments and a lot of very bad inequality. I mean, I don't care about inequality in principle. I mean, if it's the fruit of the market, but you know, when you have these artificial booms in the stock market, this is very bad. But I am also I am very thankful for internet and for the, you know, for everything we have now, for this possibility that we have today to do this. You know, not that long ago, something like the Lions of Liberty, something like Electric Land, Liberty Land, wouldn't be possible. And now it's possible, it's extremely popular. And that access of information is definitely helping. I remember when I was like, I don't know, 18, 20, 22, the internet was really starting. You really had to go, for instance, if you were interested in the Austrian School of Economics, you had to go look for it. You had to, it was that never you were going to, you know, be hit by Austrian economics. You had to actively go search for it and be very lucky. Now it's not like that. Now that is definitely changing. And I am very optimistic because of that. And the other thing I think that it's also creating in part this change is that the cultural domination of the left is absolute. And if you're young and you want to rebel, you're not going to do what your teachers, your parents, you know, and everybody in TV is saying. And the only good alternative that you have is to become libertarian. And that is definitely happening.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I have the exact same thoughts. It's funny. My father was just in town and he's libertarian-ish. You know, Ron Paul had inspired him, but then he voted for Trump. So, you know, you can't win them all. But I was talking about that same concept. And I think you're spot on in that it is, you know, the kids are going to rebel. And like you said, everywhere you look, it is the dominant culture. You know, I did a podcast about the left being lazy and how left and progressive thinking is the easiest path. It's the least resistance. It is no risk. You know, it is simply lazy thinking. And people now are realizing that and trying to fight back. So I think you're exactly right. One thing you said I wanted to circle back to is just, we talk about COVID, we talk about the restrictions being put into place, we talk about the inequality that's stemming from these lockdowns. And I was curious to see, you know, we've seen Brexit happen. England is, you know, gotten out of it. None of the things that were threatened seem to be coming to fruition, predictably, of doom and gloom. Are more countries, and have you heard any pitter-pattering of little feet saying, you know what, this experiment has failed. We're over it now. None of the promises have come to fruition, especially since we've lost our freedom of movement. You know, do you think there's going to be more Brexits coming throughout different nations within the European Union, and might it break up?
Let's say in the short term, no, I don't think so. And this is my personal opinion, you know, and of course, everything is debatable. I recognize that the European Union has certain flaws. And let's say in the West, there's very little to be proud of what has been done during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Be it European Union, the UK, the United States, Canada, whatever, you know, Australia, that, you know, now it's like Cuba, you know.
Like a nightmare. Oh my God. Australia has once again become a prison island. It started as a prison island, and now it's a prison island again.
Back to the roots. Yeah. So,
hey guys, a quick commercial break here. Sponsor break for two libertarians, Vanessa Abelard and her husband, Carlos, two libertarians who run a CBD company you're going to enjoy. That is Paloma Verde CBD. Let me spell that for you so you can know where to find it. PalomaVerde.com. Now, you can use the promo code ROAR to get 25% off your order of $75 or more. Free shipping, though, so that's awesome, to help support libertarian causes, libertarian entrepreneurs, and also this show. Now, let me tell you about these products. These are premium-grade, THC-free, and with mostly organic ingredients. They've got some mink tinctures that are fantastic. Onset about 20 minutes, last 4 to 6 hours, guys. Green apple gummies, also strawberry lemonade. Those will last about 6 to 8 hours as well. Fast-acting everyday soft gels, 10 milligrams. Those will hit you fast and hard if you're in pain, if you need some relief quick. And of course, they also have their salves. I'm looking forward to this. Mark is still hoarding it. I'm going to go over and non-aggression principally, punch him in the face. But I do want to use this salve on my sore knee, this eucalyptus lavender salve. But anyway, guys, check them out. Great company. Support libertarianism. Support us and support them. Go to PalomaVerdeCBD.com. Remember, use that promo code ROAR for 25% off your order of $75 or more and free shipping.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, let's say the COVID, you know, let's take the COVID as an very exceptional thing that has been a disaster everywhere. Pre-COVID, I think the European Union had, you know, lights and also shadows. The same with Brexit. I wish the UK well. I hope the UK becomes an engine towards free trade, towards liberalization, that, you know, forces also the European Union to follow that path. But within the Brexit forces, there were very open, you know, free traders, people who have everything very clear. And there were other people who, you know, let's say I wouldn't have, you know, sit to have a coffee with them. That
fringe people that might be just blatantly anti-immigration for the sake of anti-immigration type of, yeah.
Or there are criticisms, you know, against the European Central Bank, for instance, which can definitely be criticized. But the criticisms come from the point of view that the European Central Bank should be even more active than what it is today. You know, that's, it's like if I said, no, Biden is not being socialist enough. He should be more like Fidel Castro. Yeah, and yeah, so, I mean, if that's, let's say, that's my criticism against, you know, the status quo, it's a problem. Yeah. So in any case, I mean, I think the European Union in many ways has been a force for good and for liberalization. I can assure you that, for instance, in several countries of Central Europe, there will still be, for instance, telecommunications monopolies, if not for the European Union. Mm. So there are many things that they done well, but also there are within the Union some very strong centralizing tendencies that are extremely dangerous. And I acknowledge those as well. But it's a bittersweet, let's say, it's not a story of good and evil, regarding Brexit or regarding the EU or regarding what the central bank is doing. It's sometimes more complicated than that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, most things are. You know, talking about, and again, this, you know, these conversations are always going to be meandering as I think of things that I wanted to talk a little bit more about earlier. You know, we were talking about the emphasis of social media and the internet on spreading ideas and concepts. And I was just thinking about how, you know, in Argentina that's taking place is discussed. And it makes me think of Cuba and how the government, you know, is in complete control of the internet there. And of course, one of the first things they do is they cut off that flow of information, because that was clearly one of the things that's leading the people of Cuba to finally rebel. And of course, this is painted and partially accurately in many ways as saying, well, U.S. sanction caused some of the issues in Cuba, which, fair enough. You know, you could say that to some extent. But the, you know, the interest of public people becoming aware of their circumstances as compared to other nations and seeing that information come in, it fascinates me how people can still support states that could have the amount of control that they do. And you see it in the U.S. I'm not sure what's happening in Poland or the broader European Union as far as information of control over COVID and other topics. But it makes me very concerned as to that free flow of information. So what, I mean, is there anything going on where you are as far as the censorship we've seen on social media platforms and the, I guess, the pushing of a singular narrative by government entities?
I would say most of the censorship basically came from the social media platforms themselves. Mm-hmm. In the European Union and in general, of course, you know, there was this massive narrative being pushed, but it was being pushed. It's not that, you know, nothing else could be said. It's just that, you know, the official apparatus of news was very much in favor of that. I think there will be solutions. I think we are already seeing some solutions to what has happened, but particularly what happened in YouTube and on Twitter is extremely sad. I mean, how they became the gatekeepers that they were supposed to come in and eliminate. That is really very sad.
See, and this is just crazy, a crazy thing that just happened. Did you see that Jack Dorsey, and maybe his account got hacked by somebody inside Twitter, but Jack Dorsey has recently started tweeting out articles from Mises.org? Did you hear about this?
I saw it. Yeah. I mean, he's very much into Bitcoin, and, you know, he was, I don't think it was a hack by me. Maybe you never know, but yeah, he's very much, he was, you know, it was the 50th anniversary of, you know, the abandonment of the gold standard. Yeah. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. Jack Dorsey in particular, he's a quite interesting character. I think, clearly, let's say the machine has made him do things that he probably wouldn't like to do, you know. But But it's definitely interesting what's going on.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, this is something I was kind of leading into the left being lazy thing again, is that these people created these unbelievably groundbreaking platforms. You know, you've got Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, you know, platforms which were for the democratization of content creation, of communications. And then they got into bed with government, here working hand in hand with the Biden administration to combat certain narratives or counterfactual information or disinformation, whatever you want to call it. And that's really what is heartbreaking to me, and why, you know, I talk about, you know, regulations and also corporate cronyism and technocratic governments. That merger is what really terrifies me in many ways. And I know there's some legislation they're trying to push through here in the United States, which I don't know if it's going to work or not. Is there anything like that in Europe where you're seeing a pushback where people are saying we need to separate governments and technology platforms in that way?
I don't think it's as lively as in the US. What you have, and I mean, this is, let's say, it's a growing movement. It's a lot of people who, thanks to their own technical knowledge, they can basically do a lot, you know, live, you know, in a way freer way than we used to live, than we, you know, can live, because they are quasi hackers, you know, they have been living, let's say, like off the grid in many ways.
Right.
But it's more, what I would say in Europe, and unfortunately in Europe, and this is a very big problem, there's a push towards this kind of centralized policies coming from the EU regarding, now they are talking about e-commerce and all, but you know that this is not going to end up well if it happens. And that is a very big issue.
Why do you think it is? Do you think it's just something cultural passed down from generation to generation, where there does seem to be in Europe a broader trust in government as this is, and this is the concern in the United States. I see more of people trusting government as the arbiter of truth. Why do you think that is in Europe? Why do you think people gravitate towards that state, you know, centralized control? Do you think it's because of the historical, you know, there's so many countries in such a tightly packed area that are warring all the time that they just want to say, somebody please, you know, weigh in here?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a very good point. And I mean, there are issues, how unique what was going on in the U.S. you know, 200 something years ago. It's very interesting, and it's something that I don't know if we've seen in many countries around the globe. And the tradition in Europe, particularly in certain countries, is more like state centric. I think, let's say, you know, to put, you know, because if not, we will have to, you know, start speaking from the Greek to now. But right. Just, you know, to think about the after the Second World War, I think one big issue is that Europe, in a way, is a victim of its own success, because you know, after the war, they recovered, things went very well. Life in Europe is still great in many aspects. So it's difficult to generate demand for change and for reform when things, you know, everything seems that it's great. You know, that there are not that big or pressing issues. I come from a country like Argentina that has a lot of those pressing issues, and I can see the difference very clearly. And I think to a certain extent that creates a certain kind of like a comfort zone that you don't want to abandon. I think another issue might be that how can I put this? That there is not, I mean, and with this I go, sorry, to the historical part, but the tradition of freedom is, I mean, it's not as, the U.S. had the great thing, like many countries, like all countries in America, by the way, to be like a blank slate in many ways. And that is not the situation in Europe. And I think that is still, but on the other hand, because I want to be fair and positive as well, in Europe, there are a lot of displays of dynamism, of things that are happening that are very interesting. I am, for instance, a great admirer of the small country, the Baltic country of Estonia. What is going on? Estonia has, according to the Tax Foundation in the US, the best tax system in the whole OECD. It has a system of e-government that is amazing, that is, by the way, planned in order to serve the citizens, and the state is at the, you know, the state, let's say, tries to serve the citizens, not the other way around. And this is, let's say, like economists say, this is, you know, the revealed preference, because the tax system of Estonia, for instance, does not tax you if you keep the money in your company or you reinvest it. It only taxes you when you actually make a profit. So that's literally saying, hey, Brian, you want to start a company? We are not going to make you pay for the right to exist, you know, when you don't have clients, when you don't have, you know, any revenue at all. No. Hey, start, you know, hopefully it will go well. Maybe it won't, because, you know, being an entrepreneur is very difficult, by the way. And if it goes well and eventually you get some dividends for yourself, okay, we'll tax you. And by the way, they will tax you with a flat tax of 20%, which is very low. So there are lots of things. You have Ireland that has improved a lot. Poland currently, let's say, doesn't have the best government. I mean, very, very, very few countries do. But what has happened in Central Europe in general, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland, Hungary to a certain extent, now with some, unfortunately, political turbulences. But the reforms that happened here, Lithuania, Latvia, The things that they have done here are very forward-thinking, are very at the cutting edge of classical liberal public policies, of taxes that are tolerable, as you know, Adam Smith wanted. So, you know, there are also other many interesting things going on in the continent.
Well, let me take a quick second to tell you all, dating apps suck. Now, yes, I did meet my wife on one. That's a true story. I actually did meet my beautiful wife, Sandy, on a dating app. Actually, a dating website, because I am an old man. But I've heard that dating apps are just the worst. However, I've got a new solution for you. You know, instead of these superficial, face-swiping, expert apps that are out there that are a big waste of time, we've got a new sponsor I think you're going to love. It's a new app called Drom. Now, I'm not Swedish. It's the Swedish word for dream, but it's based upon value-based matching. So if you're a libertarian, things probably aren't necessarily going to work out with somebody that's a statist. I remember, you know, fortunately, I didn't have to deal with this too much, but I remember tales from Mark's dating woes back before he met his lovely wife about matching up with progressives here in lovely Los Angeles. So you can avoid that. You can match up with somebody that's not a statist that might share your same religion and other core values. So basically, what you want to get on is go to drom.date. So that's drom.date/lions and use the promo code lions to sign up. It's a free app. You can get on there, values based. You can pick your deal breakers. You can pick the things that you want. As soon as someone matches with you, you're going to get a notification. There's no experts. There's no match percentages. You pick what you want and you get just those matches, guys. And if you don't find a deal breaker or a deal maker that's important to you, you could add your own to other people can find them, kind of like hashtagging on social media, right? You can add your own deal maker, deal breaker for other people to search for that and find you. So check that out, guys. It's private. It's anonymous as far as these codes you're making. It's also video only. So that way you have more of a human interaction here, guys. So you're getting a video-only free dating app, brand new to check out, that's going to find you your dream girl, thus the name. Again, check that out, drom.date, drom.date/lions. You type that into your browser window on your phone. It's going to take you to the app store. You can download that for free. Have fun. Tell me about it. Hopefully you get lucky. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. That's amazing to hear. I didn't know a lot of the progressive movements that you've been talking about as far as taxation in those European countries. So I'll have to look a little bit more into that because it's fantastic to hear. One thing I found interesting just in regards to kind of the European mentality is that when I was on a talk before where, you know, Britt Shire had invited me to take part in the Free Market Roadshow, Britt, who of course you work with and is a wonderful woman. One of the things that I was taking part in was a conversation about intellectual property. And I found it very interesting that, and I got pushback in the comments. I remember the moderator telling me I was taking an anti-IP standpoint, but so many people viewed intellectual property and specifically the support of the arts as something that the governments had to safeguard. And I found that very interesting on many levels because obviously here there's some support for the arts, but I would argue that that's something individual, independent. I wouldn't want governments to influence it or have a say in that because, of course, governments change and they have their own political driving forces behind them. But also, again, coming back around, I wonder if it's something in the European cultural mindset or mentality that because there was so much back and forth conquering and, you know, and loss of culture and loss of art. And is that something deeply embedded where Europeans want that safeguarded and don't believe that it will exist if the government isn't there to protect it? Huh. We're getting way off topic. By the way, none of what we've talked about the last half hour is what I told Federico.
No, it's great. And I would say, I think we could divide, and I would like to know also what you think about this. I think we could divide. One thing is, you know, the support of the arts, and the other one is this, you know, defending IP.
IP.
Mm. The support, you know, I was, let's say, again, to be balanced, you know, Europe has countries like Estonia or Ireland that are doing amazing things, but Europe also has, you know, some of the biggest tax hells in the world. Yeah. And that basically means that for many people, for most people, I would say, this, that you have in the US and that it's so great, that is this civil society culture of, you know, donations of, it's not that possible because, you know, most of their income is taken by the government. So at least they expect certain things, you know, in return. And there are also, I mean, I think in Europe, and again, here the history and even, you know, the architecture of the place play a very important role, because I hope I am not misquoting him, but I think even Václav Klaus, the former prime minister of and president of the Czech Republic, who is a strong libertarian, he's also a little bit of polemic to certain people, but I think he has done great things. He even said that he will never remove the ban that you have in Prague to, you know, tear down buildings or build, you know. So, and really, the guy is not a socialist. And when you go to Prague, you understand that, you know, if
they want to protect that. Yeah,
I think those things play definitely a role. And really, the high taxation countries need to be taken into consideration, in the sense that people say, okay, at least, you know, give me, you know, some good museums, you know, try to, you know, subsidize the arts, you know, probably that's not the best way. The debate against, IP, it's really, I mean, this is very funny. Now it has become like almost a talking point in the libertarian movement. But this is, I'm old enough to remember that this is not that old. This has roughly 10, I think the one of the big responsibles to bring this debate is Stefan Kinsella, who wrote this magnificent article. And I think the article is from 2009 or something. I mean, it's not something that it's been being debated.
By the way,
and
he was,
I remember,
the very first guest on the Lions of Liberty podcast, by the way, the very first guest.
Amazing. He's great. Great, and he has very good points. And I remember listening to Jeffrey Tucker in Brazil. He was brought to a conference by my friends of Mises Institute Brazil. And he was saying, this was like in 2012, I think. And he was saying, no, the first time, then he became very much, let's say, in favor. He said, the first time I heard about Stefan Kinsella's arguments, I thought, no, this is like a libertarian, you know, brain fart, or this, you know, let's discuss, you know, the sex of the angels or something like that. And definitely Stefan makes very good points. You know, I have, let's say, mixed feelings about, you know, IP, in the sense, for instance, I'm a strong supporter of IP, in the sense of, I consider IP how a company brand and labels itself. And I think that should definitely be protected. And that is, by the way, under assault by governments that, you know, want to apply plain packaging. Well, I mean, they have done it to cigarettes, but now it's plain packaging for everything. In Chile, by the way, everything has plain packaging and labels of every, you know, bad labels, you know, like sugar, this, that. The worst case, Brian, is, you know, they have, you know, the Easter Bunny chocolates. They don't have a face. They don't have anything. So you go to the supermarket and you see this relatively long red thing. It looks like something completely different that shouldn't be in a supermarket. Trust me.
A sexual device.
that's the monstrosity of plain packaging. And I think that is IP. I think that should be protected. Mm. Patents, you know, in the US, unfortunately, you have, let's say, I think, you know, you also see in the US particularly the extremes of patents, and, you know, that people who want to patent everything, and, you know, just basically to get some money from whoever is doing something. That's horrible. You know, I think, let's say, we should be, I'm in favor of trying let's say we should do some sort of trial and error process. We should be prudent and we should experiment. And we should also, and this is another thing that could be done, you know, if governments wanted, let people experiment. There are, for instance, you know, there are universities have, you know, these research centers. They could have private agreements with the researchers, what to do with the IP, how to handle it. If you want to get the IP, maybe you get less salary or you know, there are millions of things that could be done that would allow, maybe some would say, no, okay, we want everything open and let's see what happens. Let's try those things. Let more experimentation happen and see what are the results and what's the best solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you there. I mean, without a doubt, there should be much more experimentation in virtually every aspect. And we do see so much of that curtailed by government, controlled by regulations. And that's one of the biggest problems I have. And we'll move on after this. I don't want to make this a, you know, an IP conversation. But yeah, that's the problem I have is that it's like anything when you get into regulations and the largest companies being able to dominate and control a certain space, a certain sector because of their, you know, their ability to legislate or have lawsuits presented based upon that IP and putting different barriers in place to experimentation and to entrepreneurs. Okay, so let's move on and talk a little bit because this time has flown by. We're already been talking 45 minutes, which is, it really went by quickly. So let's get back to what you're doing with the Austrian Economic Center and your role there, what the center does. And also then let's talk a little bit about the upcoming conference, because as I've been telling people, you can still submit papers. So I want people to try to get involved. Yeah. Hopefully my audience can say, hey, you know what? I've got some thoughts. Come to the conference. Come join us in Vienna. It's going to be amazing in person, unless they lock us down, you know, close the countries again, which God, please don't. So, yeah, please fill us in on this, because this is really important stuff you're doing.
Thank you. And yeah, I mean, first, you know, really, we are doing an Austrian conference, an Austrian economics conference in Vienna, which is like the mothership. I mean, really, if that, you know, is not, come children to the mothership, you know, come to the cathedral and, you know, we'll really, it's really like a dream. We were lucky enough to already, the conference was born in Argentina in 2006. I always wanted to bring it to Vienna. It took some time, but finally in 2019 we could do it. It was a very successful event. We were very happy with how it went. We had to close registration because it's an event in Vienna. We do before the conference, we do like social activities. We will have this year, we will have a special walking tour dedicated to Karl Menger, because this year is the 150th anniversary of the publication of his principles on economics. So there will be a lot of good things. We really want to prioritize social aspects, not socialist aspects, social aspects and networking. That is something that we have all been missing, and that is something we used to be very proud at the conference. One of the great outcomes of the conference, and that always had make us very happy and proud, is that lots of new ideas, projects, synergies were born at the conference. People meeting, you know, during a coffee break, hey, Brian, I heard you talking, we should do this. And that's amazing. And that's really we really want the conference to operate as a platform for libertarians, in this case in Europe, but from other parts of the world as well.
Well, that is absolutely beautiful. And that's something I've been thinking a lot about as well, is especially when we talk about the philosophy of libertarianism, we talk about free markets, we talk about entrepreneurship, things that really we own philosophically, but we need to have more demonstrable effects, more successful business partnerships, more success stories, more content than we can point to people to say, look, we're doing it. This philosophy works. We're successful. We're out there changing the culture, creating these amazing new technologies or a business concept. And I find that that's something, hopefully it's more, you know, less of a problem in Europe, but in the United States, at least, you don't have people that are outwardly free market, outwardly, you know, libertarian or classic liberal that are leading the culture. And that's something that needs to change if we're going to get more people converted to our way of thinking and to look at us as leaders rather than these progressives that are guiding tech companies or whatever it might be. So I think that's fantastic.
Thank you. No, and indeed, and that's the, and by the way, you know, regarding the conference, I think something, you know, like what you were saying is we always, you know, the keynote speakers and the kind of guests that we have, like, set the tone of the conference. And for instance, we are very much interested in new media. We are very, very much interested in what libertarians like you are doing with podcasting, you know, and we really think that that's one of the ways to go for the libertarian movement. So yeah, we are extremely happy to have you this year, that you'll be, you know, recording a live episode at the conference.
Without a doubt.
That's going to be amazing. You have, you know, big shoes to fill, because 2 years ago, Bob Murphy and Tom Woods did that at the conference. So it's going to be, there's a hard competition, but I'm sure you'll be up to it.
I'm up for it.
And the other thing is, definitely. And the other thing is the kind of keynote speakers that we have. We have Hannes Gissurarson from Iceland. He's a very serious and dedicated scholar. He has also done a lot of very cool things regarding, you know, markets for fishing, which is in Iceland is very important. And, but he's a very serious and interesting scholar. We have Jeff Booth, who is not a scholar and who is not technically an Austrian, but he's very much related to what we are doing. I don't know, he's very well known in certain circles. I think he should be more known in the Austrian circles. His book, The Price of Tomorrow, which was published last year, I think is one of the most significant books of the 21st century. And I think is one of the most Austrian books published in the, and he's not only, let's say, he's not only a successful entrepreneur, he's not only a bestseller author, he's also someone who's very much into technology, innovation, and he's, let's say, he's pushing Bitcoin a lot, and not for, you know, like, hey, let's make money with Bitcoin, no, for the important reasons. I mean, making money with Bitcoin is also great, but he was also doing it for the right reasons. And he's, again, he embodies something that we want to show, that, you know, that is social economics, that is libertarianism. Then we have Marx Kausen, who is not only a fantastic economist, but he's also the organizing force behind Freedom Fest. And he's a fantastic scholar, author of many books, but also he's an activist, you know, in the good way of the, in the good meaning of the word. And we have from Poland, by the way, a young disillusioned scholar called Agnieszka Płonka, who is magnificent. She's very much disillusioned with academia, even though now she's finishing her PhD. She's very young, by the way. She's studying and doing research in very interesting fields, particularly psychology and totalitarianism and the totalitarian tendencies of states. And again, she's another profile that we think really shows with the kind of conference we want to have. And this conference is not only, I mean, you can come as an attendee, listen to, you know, and have a great time with us, you know, talk to everyone at the coffee breaks, at the social meetings, at the dinner, etc. But you can also submit a paper. We have an academic committee that selects them. We try to be, let's say, generous, but also rigorous with what we have. In 2019, we had close to 60 presentations all in all in the conference. Let's see what we have this year, because, you know, it's not business as usual, but right, the call for papers still open, and we are really looking forward to receiving as many as we can, and for people from all over the world, from the US, to come to the conference to present their ideas and to generate this climate that it's not only intellectual, but it's also of people who are doing things. And what else can be done? Hey, I'm doing this, you're doing that. Okay, what we can do together? What projects are born at the conference? We're very excited for that to happen.
Yeah. And you can go register. It's austrianconference.org, and people can still register there. My mouse has decided to stop working. There we go. I was just going to make sure. So yes, austrianconference.org, guys, you can submit there. You can find out all the information and get involved. And I really do hope people will come out for that. It's just an awesome time. And, you know, with COVID, you could probably get some decent deals traveling internationally. I'm sure the airfare is probably a little discounted compared to what it would normally be. So hopefully people jump on that opportunity. Just to wrap the show up,
because Afghanistan is so top of mind, I save it for the end, but I wanted to talk a little bit about this. You know, we're seeing the United States was involved for 20 years in Afghanistan, based upon the premise that, of course, the Taliban was behind the 9/11 attacks. That was proven to be false, but we were there for 20 years. And now we've pulled out, expended an unbelievable amount of resources, time, money, blood. And immediately after pulling out, within, 3 days, the country's been taken over by the Taliban. I mean, I'm just curious what the take in Europe is. Are people more or less pointing and laughing? And do you think this drives home very concretely that empire building is no longer possible and is a fool's errand to partake in for these countries, for any country?
It's very funny that, you know, it took the Taliban. I mean, if we wanted to tour Afghanistan, it would have taken longer than 3 days. I mean, it took them military retaking the country took them less than, you know, if we were touring it, you know, as you know, just as yeah. as normal travelers, you know, seeing the place. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, this is really one of the very important topics. And, you know, just to be completely honest and fair, I remember when all this craziness started, 2001, 2002, I was not against the invasion of Afghanistan. Right. Yeah. And, well, you mentioned someone that really, I mean, it's not that I'm going to give him credit or he would care, but what Ron Paul did was, I mean, went way beyond the borders of the US and influenced and created a lot of libertarians all over the world. And in fact, I was very much influenced by what he was saying about wars, what he was saying. And that completely changed my view on the topic. But I have to admit, at the beginning, I was saying, oh, yeah, the invasion of Afghanistan, it's not that crazy. Probably it's the right thing to do, given what happened in 9/11. And, you know, let's say I'm not a bloodthirsty maniac, you know, psychopath. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people that I think, like myself, are very much confused still. The role of the traditional media in that has been appalling, and they have been cheerleaders for every, you know, craziness, you know, bombing whoever, you know, that's always fun. Exactly. You want to bomb Argentina? It's lovely. Yeah, you know, that's presidential. Right. Yeah, great.
They'll make up a reason why it was warranted. You know, it's not a problem. Exactly. We'll figure it out. As they say, we'll fix it in post, right? The old Hollywood saying.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's the thing is, you know, and you were asking for the European perspective. I mean, this is, you know, by many people, this is seen as, you know, something that we all knew was going to happen. Because, I mean, would you have bet? No, the moment, you know, the American forces move from Afghanistan, the country will completely stabilize and everything will be great. No, we all knew that, you know, and this was delaying the inevitable, you know, with a huge cost. I mean, this was all insane. The other thing, Brian, you know, related to this, let's say, very trigger happy foreign policy, this, you know, nation building and things like that. The disaster that has happened in the Middle East and North Africa has created a lot of problems for Europe. The so-called refugee crisis is a direct consequence of the destruction of Libya, of everything that happened in Egypt and in many other countries. And that, again, I mean, this is, you know, like playing with forces that you know how this starts, but you never know how this finishes. And it always finishes, you know, in a very bad way and not in a way that you would have predicted at all. And in that sense, you know, let's say what's going on in Afghanistan is definitely a part of all that. We'll see what happens in the future. I don't think it was unexpected. People are looking at, okay, yeah, this is another, but what has happened, particularly in North Africa, it's been very destabilizing for Europe. It's been very destabilizing for the European Union, and it has created lots of tensions and situations that shouldn't have happened. And they are not going to stop in the near future, at least, you know, unless you are extremely optimistic, which, I mean, in this case, I am not. So these tensions will continue for a long time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
In the West, in general, I think we should think of different ways. I think the good way would be go the Ron Paulian way, which is, you know, do your thing in your own country, don't bother anyone, trade, try to be an example. That's it.
Right. Well, it just seems like, you know, it used to be this concept of exporting American culture was the best way forward. And I still agree that that is the best way forward. The best ideas. I mean, we talked about the free market of ideas. The best ideas will speed across the world the fastest. They will be adopted the most speedily and readily and have the most impact. And you look at militaristic intervention and how it has the opposite effect. You know, we're looking about terrorism. You know, you're creating more terrorists or terrorists. I won't even call them terrorists anymore. We're the ones that are terrorizing them. But for every person you kill, you create five more people that have a vendetta against you. And like you said, the impact of people fleeing, refugees, I can't imagine, especially when you have talked about European cultures where they're very unique, very strongly identified cultures. And then having a large segment of the population, you know, basically transplanted in there with little chance for acculturation. It's not even that they necessarily want to be a part of that culture. And the bitterness that's going to stem from that, not only from the people that are coming there, but from the people that, of course, are in that country already to have to deal with these forces. And then to expect them to simply be able to harmoniously merge together is beyond ridiculous. So, yeah, to your point, the United States and militarism in general is just causing an absolute amount of strife that I can't think is developing any goodwill anywhere it reaches. Maybe Coca-Cola still is, but the country at large.
I mean, it's not the United States. It's the government. And it's the same, you know, sometimes I say China is doing this, and it's not China. China is a country full of magnificent people. It's just, you know, that they are governed by communists. Right. Well, this is, you know, this is the same. It's just, the U.S. is still the beacon of freedom and of hope in the world. And if very bad things happen in the U.S., even worse things will happen in other places. So that is definitely still the reality. And it's a force for good in many, you know, it's civil society, the people, the entrepreneurs. It's still a magnificent example and a magnificent force for good in many ways. So there's still hope, you know, that things will change, upper echelons of politics.
Yeah, so still worth fighting for, I guess. I'll keep pushing, I guess, through to keep the libertarian and free market emphasis strong in the face of strong government opposition. I think that's going to wrap it up. I mean, anything else you want to say to people as far as following you, following the Austrian Center, following, you know, any of the other social platforms so people can get involved, stay active and see what you're doing. And of course, I'll also put these in the show notes for the show, which are at lionsofliberty.com/episodes/ELL242.
Yeah, well, thank you. Firstly, thank you. It was great having this conversation with you. Yeah, you can follow the Austrian Center on Twitter, on Instagram. It's at Austrian Center. Also, you can follow Fundación Bases at Fundación Bases. It's very easy, both on Twitter and Instagram. And go check austrianconference.org. Write us an email if you want to want more, or you want to find out more, or write us on social media. We try to reply very, very quickly, and we'll be very happy to have as much of your audience at in Vienna at an Austrian and Libertarian conference in November as well. The conference, we are very optimistic. We think it's going to happen, and the conference is going to be in person, or it won't be. We are not doing any live streams or anything like that. That's great. But an event like the conference needs the face-to-face interaction, needs the social parts in order to create, to develop all its potential. So we're really optimistic. We're doing I'm sorry to say this, but I mean, we're doing a big effort to do this. Everybody at the Austrian Center is doing a very big effort, and also at Fundación Bases. But, you know, this event is in Vienna, and most of the burden falls into their shoulders, and they are doing a very big effort in a very sincere effort to have this conference, and also for us as libertarians to push for, you know, the go back to normal, the real normal, not the new normal, right. The real normal, the good normal, you know, be able to you know, to travel, to meet people and to be social beings as we have always been. So if you want to support that, that would be great. Join us in Vienna, austrianconference.org.
There you go. As I've been yelling at people, don't be lazy. Get involved, people. So again, thank you, Federico Fernandez, everybody. Check him out. Check the Austrian Conference out. And of course, I will continue to talk about this and remind you all. So I will wrap the show up. Thank you again. We'll see you soon. All right, everybody. So just to end it, that was a fantastic conversation. Like I said, I'm really a fan of Federico and everything that he's doing. I thought the conversation was really fun, really fascinating. And to remind you, we have many other fun, fascinating conversations here on the Lions of Liberty podcast. Mark Clare on Mondays, he is finishing up his debate month. We just had Angela McArdle and Matt Erickson discuss the Ron Paul movement, which was a pretty fascinating conversation. That was on Monday. And of course, John Odermatt with Finding Freedom. He is every Thursday. So make sure to listen to those, subscribe to the podcast, share the show. If you can, tell a friend, tell a loved one, send it to somebody randomly on the street, tell a person on a bus. However, it spreads the message of liberty. That's all we ask. And yeah, subscribe to our YouTube as well, where hopefully I will not get pulled from. All right, guys, from me, Brian McWilliams, from the Lions of Liberty and from Electric Liberty Land, always stay plugged into Liberty.